which is a very convenient way to compute the partition function of a statistical mechanics model. In particular, we looked at the 1D Ising model. And I will write the Hamiltonian again. And yesterday, I used decoupling lambda and kappa. And where lambda is just beta times h and kappa is beta times j, so that I have absorbed the temperature in the coupling constants of the model. And our task was to compute the partition function for the system with n spins. So this is, of course, the trace of e to the minus h because beta has been absorbed here. So what we saw is that we can write this object like the trace of some matrix that is our transfer matrix to the n. And this transfer matrix T was made of two pieces. So namely, it turned out to be this product, e to the k, e to the minus k, e to the minus k, e to the k times e to the lambda, e to the minus lambda, that I will call t1 and t2. Now we can diagonalize this matrix, and this will have two eigenvalues, epsilon 1 or epsilon 2, so that in the end, this trace becomes epsilon 1 to the n plus epsilon 2 to the n. Okay. So we have also seen that because this matrix has all positive entries, then there is the maximum eigenvalue is strictly non-degenerate, and it is greater than 0, and it is also analytic. So this allowed us to write easily the free energy and to see that there is for k going to infinity. So when the temperature goes to 0, there can be a first order phase transition. Okay. So I want to show another use of the transfer matrix, actually two uses. So the first one is compute correlation functions. And then let's see if I can make, well, maybe I will have to use this one. The second use will be to do the promise the classical to quantum mapping that yesterday I mentioned briefly. So first, let's see how we can compute correlation functions. Okay. So we are interested in computing the expectation value of two spins that are on the chain at two positions, L and L prime. Okay, so I want to compute this object. Okay, now it is convenient already to start using Pauli operators. So the thing is that because each of the spins has two values that are plus one or minus one, so I can collect these two values in a matrix, which is a diagonal matrix, well, that we call sigma z. So it's the Pauli matrix. So in particular, by taking the using this operator, I can put them in here. So my model would become this one. And instead of saying that the variable s has the value plus 1 or minus 1, we have encoded the configuration of the system in some state vector. So some state vector says for every spin, so the spin at the position 1, so this can have two values that are, for instance, up or down, or plus or minus. And then the spin at the position 2, and so on with the spin at the position n. And then it turns out that, well, when you compute the expectation value of sigma z, so at some position l, on one of these spin configurations, well, you have either plus 1 or minus 1, because these are the matrix elements in this basis. So nothing has changed. This is just notation. So I want to stress that the fact that we have used operators and states in a, well, you can think they are in a Hilbert space, has not made this model any more quantum. The reason is that our spin configurations are always product states. There is nothing in this Hamiltonian that can create a superposition. We are just reading our classical configurations, like configuration of a state vector, but this has not made the model quantum mechanical. So it would become quantum mechanical if there is something that allows me to make superpositions of these values. Okay? So in other words, within the quantum mechanical world, there are completely classical states like this. And since I'm only using these configurations here, I can still use this formalism, but it's still a classical model. So later we will see that, so something that would make the model quantum mechanical is to introduce here some operator, T is not okay, some operator V that does not commute with these operators. Then we would see that our eigenstates, and therefore our Gibbs state, that is this one over Z, would be made of a distribution probability over these eigenstates that are not simple product states of our spin configurations. So they are not just classical states. So, but for the time being, this is just a notation that will be helpful to do the mapping to the quantum case. But this is not the mapping yet. This is just notation. Okay. Well, so now we want to compute correlation functions. So I want to compute this object here that now I can call sigma z if I want. And by this symbol, right now, I still mean the same thing, that I want this expectation value in the Gibbs state. So namely, this is really, again, just 1 over z, and then the sum over all the possible configurations of my sigma z of e to the minus h. So again, remember the temperature has been absorbed in these coupling constants. And I have a reason for that, because in a while we will find another temperature that is not that one, times sigma z L sigma z L prime. Okay? So this is what we want to compute. Okay. So The way to do this is to again write explicitly what is this exponential, and we do it by inserting this term and then factorizing in some appropriate way the exponential of this sum, which again it's easy here because all this term commute. So if it was a genuine quantum Hamiltonian, this would be extremely complicated. It wouldn't be possible. But this is easy. So this is really what we did yesterday when we found this form, because we found that there is some matrix T such that this exponential is the product, is the trace of the product of T n times. Okay, so if you follow similar passages, and now I will make this is just for the sake of the calculation. The calculation is just slightly more complicated for lambda different from zero. So let me put lambda equal zero. This is equal to also let me use this notation that the correlation function is called CLL prime. So CLL prime is equal 1 over Z, the trace. And now we have some matrix multiplication. And this matrix multiplication now only involves, because I put lambda equal to 0, only involves the transfer matrix associated to this term that, if you remember, was just T1, only this part. The part only contains K, kappa. So now there is only one slight complication, is that in this, these also are matrices. So when we do the multiplication, so they're not all the, so these matrices are all the same in this product, but these are not the same. So we must be careful in the order in which they are multiplied with each other. So it is easy to say, I leave it to you to prove, that this is equal to T1 to some power that I would say, sigma ZL, then T1 again, sigma ZL, then T1 again. And this is N minus L prime, and this is L, and this is L prime minus L. Absolute value. But here I'm using, so I'm considering L prime greater than L. It's just a choice that I can make. Okay. Well, so so the reason why it happens in this way is because, so each T1 has indexes that are sigma z, so T1 at the site j is as indexes sigma z j sigma z j plus 1, and then it's multiplied with the next one. So we have, of course, to multiply first L of them, then there is the spin over on L, then there are L minus L prime, actually L prime minus L, other spins, then the L spin, and then all the others. So maybe this should appear here, but this doesn't really matter because I'm taking the trace. So this product, if I do a cyclic permutation, is the same. So the important thing that I must get right in this calculation is that T1 to the power L prime minus L is sandwiched between the operators, the spin operators at the site L, and at the site L prime. Okay. So to do this calculation, the right trick is to do it not in this basis. So this is by definition, as you can see, the basis in which sigma z is diagonal. So this is the basis in which sigma z has this expression. But instead in the basis in which T1 is diagonal. And so T1 in the old basis is, you can just check this, is this operator. Okay? Oh, no, sorry. No, it's that operator. So I've already written. It's this operator. Okay. Anyway, its eigenstates, and remember we are in the case lambda equals zero, its eigenstates are the state that I will call spin right, which has eigenvalue epsilon one, and the state spin left that has eigenvalue epsilon two. Sorry, this one. Where these states are defined by, okay, so in the old basis, we use plus minus or plus one minus one. So let me use plus one minus one. So we have one plus minus minus one over square root of two. Okay. So these are the eigenstates of T1. So we will compute this object in this basis. Okay, so in this basis, so of course T1 becomes just epsilon 1, epsilon 2. And so what I was writing before was the expression for sigma z. And sigma z in this basis, in the new basis, is 0, 1, 1, 0. So this term, sigma z, T1, sigma z, so this is just a matrix multiplication. The result is epsilon 2, epsilon 1. Okay. So this term is epsilon 2 is the matrix that is epsilon 2 to the L prime minus L, and is epsilon 1 to the L prime minus L. Right? Because if I put L prime minus L here, I find it here. Okay. Well, then this is a diagonal matrix, and then we're multiplying for order two diagonal matrices. And then we are taking, you know, so we are just multiplying the eigenvalues, and then we are summing them. So my CLL prime is equal 1 over z, but what is z? It's the partition function that is the sum of the eigenvalues. And in this case, this is just epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2. And so collecting the other terms, of course, this is to the n. Yeah, because it's z is the trace of t to the n. So this is to the n. And this will be epsilon 1 n minus L prime plus L, right? Because we have the epsilon 1 is the first eigenvalue of this one. We have n minus L prime plus L times epsilon 2. But now epsilon 2 comes with L prime minus L plus the second eigenvalue for T1 is epsilon 2. With this power n minus L prime plus L times now epsilon 1 L prime minus L. Okay, so this is the correlation function. And we can massage it a little bit. So in particular, for n large, n going to infinity, this is equal to the hyperbolic tangent of k to the L prime minus L. Where is minus? So this is a power here. Okay. So we have computed correlation functions. Now, the interesting thing is, so now with this expression of the correlation functions, we can start doing some considerations of what happens if we take the continuum limit of this lattice. So we have our spin chain, so continuum limit. And we are labeling our sites with this index L. Okay, now because this is a lattice, the lattice spacing, we can call it A. So now we could, you know, choose a coordinate on this. So for instance, X, and say that in terms of this continuous coordinate, because A is any real number, right? It's the lattice spacing. This is L times A. So for reasons that will be clear later, instead of using the letter X, I will use tau. So I will use tau because I want the continuum limit to show something that has to do with time. Well, then to take the limit really means that we take the lattice spacing to zero in some sense. Okay, so let's see what would happen. So first of all, my correlation function now, so imagine that L prime is zero. So it's just this C of tau. Okay. This is equal to the expectation value of sigma z at tau times sigma z at zero. Okay. And it is this object here. But now let me define this quantity, 1 over xi, as 1 over a, the log of the hyperbolic cotangent of k. So this is just a definition. With this definition, here we have a simple form. I could even just use tau because tau is greater than zero. Okay. So we see that the correlation functions for this model, when we have taken lambda to zero, are exponentially suppressed in the distance with some length scale xi that is defined by this expression. Okay, now we would like to take some limit in which we can have a sort of continuum theory. So the right limit to take is k large. So with k large, this expression becomes the following. So implies this one, that psi, so this is k large, psi over a is almost e to the 2k over 2. Okay, so this is just a Taylor approximation. Okay, so for k large, this is a very large number. So this means that we are considering the case in which correlations extend on distances that are much larger than our lattice spacing. So as long as this happens, this means that what happens in the neighborhood of one spin is not really important. So we can consider A very, very, very small. So A small is compatible with this number very large. Okay. So let's see what happens for large K, so in this limit. What happens to our partition function in the large K limit? Okay. So first of all, T1, so is this expression that you have over here.
Of tangent hyperbolic of k, should it go to infinity or to zero?
So this would be a very small number. It would be
on the next one here. When k goes to infinity.
So for k large, this is almost one.
Yes.
So this is almost zero.
Yes, but we say that it's like.
I guess there must be minus.
No, but psi over a. So a over psi okay. is almost zero.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So T1, I can write it as e to the k times 1 plus A over 2 psi sigma x, right? Because I have k that multiplies, so this is equal to the identity that multiplies e to the k plus sigma x that multiplies e to the minus k. And for large k, this is a good approximation. And so also we want to use this approximation now. And so this becomes e to the k exponential of a over 2 psi times sigma x. Okay, so this is T1. And now let me define some energy constant that has to do with K. So imagine that so K is my energy scale, right? Because it's my only parameter in the Hamiltonian here. And now I define an energy per unit of my lattice spacing k over a, and I call it minus e zero. Okay, so this is just a definition. With this definition, I can write this thing in this way. So this would be e the exponential to minus e zero a. So this becomes the exponential of a that multiplies minus e zero plus 1 over 2 psi sigma x. Okay. So this is what I wanted to do, is to write T1 as the exponential, so let me e to the a sum operator of 1. So this is O1. This is what I wanted. So T2 instead is e to the lambda sigma z. Well, because it's just this one. And now let me define a rescaled lambda tilde equal to lambda over a. so that I can just write this as e to the a lambda sigma z. And again, my goal was to write it like the exponential of a times an operator or two. So now we consider our product T1, T2, that is what we call the T, and the tenters our partition function, because this is what I want to evaluate. And we are in this large K limit, of course. Well, so this is equal to e to the a of 1 times e to the a of 2. Now, you know, when these are numbers, this is exact, right? But these are operators, so this is not exactly true. So what happens is, though, that the error that we make depends on the commutator, on the norm of the commutator between these two operators. And this norm goes like a square, right? Because the commutator between a of 1 and a of 2 is a square commutator of 1 of 2. So this is a 1 plus something order a square. And remember that in our continuum limit, we are taking k to infinity by considering very large psi and very small a. So a is very small. Okay, so this is some good expression. Okay, so we are almost there, because now we would like to write O1 plus O2 . Let me define it as HQ, and Q stands for quantum. And this is right now econ 0, so minus HQ. Econ 0 minus 1 over 2 psi sigma x. And then we have the other O2. It's minus lambda tilde sigma z. So in absence of this term, this object is the level spacing between the two levels of this Hamiltonian. So it's what we call the mass gap of the Hamiltonian. And in particular, the mass gap must be called delta over 2. So if we put the delta over 2, the mass gap is delta. This is all. The definition is 1 over 2 psi. So this is, again, just a definition. So let me write it explicitly. It's 0 minus delta over 2 sigma x minus lambda tilde sigma z. So now you see that our transfer matrix, so in this limit, k large, is e to the a hq. And there is a minus, right? So this is the first important result. So what was the transfer matrix doing? The transfer matrix was helping us in computing the partition function and all the thermodynamic quantities of statistical mechanics systems by showing us how something on the spin L affects the next spin at L plus 1. But once we take the continuum limit, can you still read it over here? This is, so when a is very small, this is like the infinitesimal time evolution with a quantum Hamiltonian, because this is a quantum Hamiltonian. You know, now we see this is a quantum Hamiltonian because we have both sigma x and sigma z. So the eigenstates are not simple configurations of just in the basis of sigma z. So the transfer matrix is like the evolution in imaginary time with the quantum Hamiltonian, but it's the quantum Hamiltonian of a single spin. So this spatial dimension that was relating the spin on the left to the spin on the right is now relating the spin at the time 0 to the spin at the time alpha A. So this is like a small tau. So tau is in general, as we saw, AL. So the transfer matrix is transferring from when L changes from L to L plus 1. So the tau is just A. The time interval, the length interval in units of A is just 1. OK, so let me go back to this one. OK, so the very last thing about this quantum to classical mapping is finally to write the partition function. And so again, this is T1, T2, which is T to the n. And now I can define, so let me use other words. This is just because they have used a lot and they convey some meaning. Let me use this. Well, the total length, and that, let me put tau, because now our lengths are in the time direction, because we are interpreting these distances like time, is just n times a, right? Well, so we can write this one as t1, t2, L tau over a. There was also. So, and this is what? This is the trace of e to the minus. HQ, where is it? AHQ. But then there is an n. So this becomes L tau HQ. So, well, now this really looks like a partition function of some system which is quantum mechanical at some inverse temperature that is L tau. So we can call this inverse temperature 1 over T, but it's a new T. It's not the beta that I was using before. That's why I got rid of the T in early stages of the calculation so that I wouldn't get confused. Well, OK, so this is the trace of e to the minus HQ over T. So the partition function of a statistical mechanical classical model in one dimension is equal to the partition function of a quantum statistical mechanical model in zero dimension, but it's quantum mechanical, so it has the coordinate of time somehow, at a new temperature, though. No, so it's not the same temperature. It's the same temperature that is dictated by the way we have scaled our lengths and our lattice spacing and so on. OK. So you can do the same thing. It's just longer. So in fact, I'm wondering whether I should do it tomorrow, or it could be material for an exercise. But so let me just give you the result for now. If we start from the 2D, so D equal 2, classical Ising model, and then we would try to find our transfer matrix. But by now, we know that it's not easy to know exactly. But when we do the continuum limit, so we don't really need to compute it, but we would find a quantum mechanical model, so some HQ now, that lives in D equal 1 spatial dimensions plus 1. That is the time. So if we have the Ising model in 2D, we would be tempted to call one of these lattice spacings like our coordinate tau. And when tau becomes a continuum variable, we would find a quantum Hamiltonian. And so what is material for an interesting exercise to find the exact form of HQ. But the solution is that you have minus, let me use a new coupling constant. G sigma I sigma x I minus j sigma I sigma z I sigma z I plus 1. So as you can see, this is a chain. There's only an index I, and they move from I to s plus 1. So this looks very, very similar to the Ising chain that we've written many times, like up there, right? But there is a very important difference. So the very important difference is that this one is not sigma z, but it's sigma x. Yep.
Do you consider without external Q the quantum model?
No. The complete model. So if you do the calculation,
be third term with sigma z.
No. So the so I understand the question.
In D4 we have interaction of vertical wire,
right,
sigma x, the horizontal bar, and sigma z, sigma z.
Yeah.
And also if we have external field, it's just sigma z. Yeah.
Well, no, so my no means that I understand what you're saying, that without the external field, we would only have this term. So yeah, so the external field would become this term, I think. The external field becomes this one.
Well, we can discuss it later. I don't see.
So you're saying that the external field becomes this?
I say that it would become the third term.
Ah, a third term?
Yes, with just sigma z on one side.
Oh, I see.
Just like we had sigma z term in the 1D.
Uh-huh. Ah, okay, I see. So I think you're right. So the classical AC model in without external field, but it would acquire an external field due to the coupling in the other direction. Okay, yes, that's right. But moreover, the whole nature of the system has changed because now these operators do not commute. So it's really a quantum mechanical model. Okay, so now that we are in the quantum mechanical model, we see that the ground state properties of this model depend very drastically upon the value of these two coupling constants. In the quantum mechanical model, we are typically concerned with the properties of the ground state of the model, because at finite temperature, all the relevant physics can be still described by a classical model. So the real quantum interesting properties are only at T equals zero when the system is in the ground state, as can be inferred from the Gibbs state. That is just e to the minus beta h q over z. So when beta is infinity, the only populated state is the ground state. Okay. So this leads us to the notion of quantum phase transitions. So which that is a notion which with which we'll be concerned all the time now. So a quantum phase transition is some drastic transition in the properties of the ground state of our model at t equals zero. So imagine we have some Hamiltonian that depends on some parameter lambda. And lambda can be, you know, a family of parameters. So it can be a vector lambda 1, lambda small n. So for instance, in this case, lambda is the pair gj. So for every lambda, we can find the ground state that I will call the vacuum 0. But this depends on lambda. Okay, so through the Hamiltonian, the space of the parameters is mapped into the space of quantum states. So we have these parameters that live on some, so this is just some set, open set in R to the n, and we are mapping onto the space of quantum states. So if this reminds you of something in differential geometry, this is right. This looks like a chart on this manifold. And at some point, we'll be concerned with the question whether this manifold possesses some metric or some curvature and stuff like that. We'll see that later. So at t equals zero, our free energy is just the energy. So the free energy density is just the energy density. And this energy density, so let me call it E, also depends on lambda. So E to the lambda. Sorry, E of lambda. Now, if this is a, so this operator here is supposed to be smooth. And this implies that this object here, so this is a theorem, that say that this eigenvalue must be continuous. However, this does not imply, so this is not true, that their derivatives should be also continuous. So in particular, it can happen that this object is discontinuous, and then the second derivative is continuous, or that this one is continuous and this one is discontinuous. Well, we have seen how this can happen, that some eigenvalue so the thing that maybe I didn't mention explicitly when I said that this is the energy density, this is the ground state energy density. So the minimum energy. So we have seen that the way this can happen, that this is discontinuous, is when there is, so let me plot lambda and my minimum eigenvalue A0 of lambda, and maybe the first excited state, A1 of lambda. And there is a value of lambda that I will call lambda C, such that there is a level crossing. Then the derivative of the minimum eigenvalue is discontinuous. So this is a first order non-analysity, and we will call it first order quantum phase transition. The other possibility is that these two eigenvalues do something like this. So the level crossed is avoided. So for the finite system, either there is a level crossing, or if there is some repulsion here, this must be finite. So if the system is on a finite lattice, the difference between these two eigenvalues must be a finite number. However, as we go in the thermodynamic limit, this difference, that is the what we call the mass gap, can go to zero in the thermodynamic limit. So this is what we call a continuous quantum phase transition. The continuous quantum phase transition is some avoided level crossing, but the system in the thermodynamic limit becomes gapless. And the way it becomes gapless as we approach lambda C is with some form that is typically of this form. So we have some energy scale, J, for instance. Then we have lambda minus lambda C to some exponent that I will call zeta nu. So this is just a product of two numbers. I could use just one number, but let me call it like this. And this is called critical exponent. Now what happens is that different quantum mechanical systems, sometimes with different Hamiltonians, or the Hamiltonians that are only different in some detail, but sometimes they are really different. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Where does the Z go from?
So the history, I don't know. Okay. These are just two numbers that are traditionally called Z and nu.
Okay.
And I will show you in a second why I'm using two numbers instead of just one.
So they are called critical exponents.
Hmm?
Both of them are called critical exponents.
Yes, and also their product is called the critical exponent. Okay. So the important thing is that different models may have the very same critical behavior, meaning that these numbers are the same. And this is what defines an important notion, condensed matter, that the notion of universality, at least for the critical models, means having the same set of critical exponents. So by the way, you also have seen that somehow delta and psi are related, right? So in the Ising model, we saw this. So in general, this number here is called Z. It's called dynamical critical exponent. And for the Ising model in 1 plus 1 dimension, we've seen that z equal 1. So also the correlation length has some critical behavior. Well, so we see that as the system becomes gapless, this thing will diverge. Well, and it will diverge with nu. So because we want to use the letter nu for this behavior and the letter z for this relationship, we need to call this critical exponent. Okay. So let me now show the phase diagram where there is lambda and the temperature. So far we've been seeing that there is some critical lambda in which correlation functions diverge. Sorry, correlation length diverges and the gap shrinks. And then there is temperature. Okay. So we would like to understand to what extent the quantum behavior extends to finite temperature. So here we have two energy scales. The two important energy scales are the KB, the Boltzmann, now this case, the KB of KBT. So this is the thermal energy scale. And then we have the Planck energy scale. And what is important is this time, the time of local equilibration. So this means how fast the system reacts to a local perturbation and locally equilibrates again. So this is typically a fast time that can be, so typically is much larger for any decent temperature than this. Okay? So, and this happens when delta, when our gap is much larger. Sorry, the other energy scale is delta. So when delta is much larger than this, this is what happens. So here, we have this kind of equilibration time in which the system pretty much behaves classically. Then here we have a sort of crossover region. So these lines are not critical. You can continuously go from here to here. But here the equilibration time is more or less h bar over kt. So this is a region where both thermal and quantum mechanical fluctuations are present. And it is a very interesting region. And I'm mentioning this because if we want to study quantum phase transitions and then see what observational consequences they have, we must understand what happens when we are, yes, at a low temperature, but not absolute zero. Otherwise, it wouldn't have any experimental meaning. So let me mention. Okay, so the next topic that we will basically start tomorrow is the quantum phase transitions to study the details of the quantum phase transition in the Ising model, in the quantum Ising model, in 1 plus 1 dimension. Sometimes this model is called Ising chain in a transverse field. And when you hear the word transverse, you understand that it's quantum mechanical because means that there is a field in a direction that is different from the Ising coupling sigma z, which can only happen for a quantum mechanical model. It means that there are operators that do not commute, whereas in the classical one, there is no notion of being transverse. So transverse is another way to understand that it's quantum mechanical. Okay, yeah, so tomorrow we'll start this. Questions?
Repeat the different phase, not phases, but the diagram, the different regions.
Oh, yeah, so this region is the region that is characterized by the fact that the gap is small with respect 1 over kBT. Okay, so here at t equals 0, 1 over t is very large, and because we are near the critical point, delta is very small, actually, in thermodynamic limit is 0. So this is fulfilled in full. Okay, and we have a quantum critical behavior. So when we move up in temperature, we, and also we move a little bit away from the critical point, we have that now T is not zero. So this number is large, but not infinity. And delta is still very small, but not zero. But so this is also true. And when this is true, the typical equilibration time goes like this, like 1 over kT. And this is what we call the quantum critical region, QC. So of course, if we move too much away from the critical point, or we go too high in temperature, so there is some crossover here too, we get out of this quantum critical region, and all the physics is only described by classical effects. There are no interesting quantum effects. So the treatment of these effects at small but finite temperature is a very interesting topic. It's a very advanced topic. So in this course, we focus on the idealized case when we are exactly at the critical point and exactly at t equals 0. But I'm mentioning this because I want you to know that then one can do a more advanced treatment to understand this region, and this is important. Otherwise, this would be only theoretical speculations. But the experimentally accessible region must be here because some temperature must be finite. So it's just a way to say that it makes sense to study the idealized case, because then you have a method to carry your results over to finite but small temperature. Yeah, so there are some additional effects, because here all, so what tomorrow we'll see that this quantum phase transition, which at this point is just some non-analyticity in the energy density of the ground state, but like in classical physics, it will change things in the phase. In particular, we will see that there can be change of symmetry, as we expect, and then later we'll see that there can be different types of changes. And this is why quantum phase transitions are very interesting, because quantum phases are much richer than classical phases. You have more possibilities of ordering. So here, what drives the phase transition? So it's some fluctuations. In classical statistical mechanics, the fluctuations are thermal fluctuations. Here they are quantum mechanical fluctuations due to the fact that when two terms in the Hamiltonian are competing, you create very big superpositions of many states who give you many fluctuations. So what happens here is that these two fluctuations are both present. So there are both thermal fluctuations and quantum mechanical fluctuations. So the physics is different, but it remembers some of the pure quantum fluctuations that you have at equal zero. Okay. See you tomorrow.